I see your screen.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Let's make sure that works. Okay, so we're, sorry, I just came home. Where we are, when Shmuel bet Perek Yud Tet, then we got the news about Avshalom. Well, nobody really told him anything, but his army won the battle. Avshalom is dead, buried under a pile of rocks somewhere on the eastern bank of the Jordan. And the messengers came to him and refused to tell him what happened to Avshalom that he keeps asking. And they just say, may all your enemies, here we go, Yukanar Oive Adoni HaMelech. May all your enemies be like Avshalom. And David gets the hint. So what happens? The beginning of our parak, where he got HaMelech, and the king became, how could it translate as very emotional. The guys trembled, being angry. And he goes up to the roof of the gatehouse. Remember from last parak, that's where they were watching for any kind of news of the battle. And he starts crying. This is what he said as he was walking. B'ni Avshalom, b'ni, b'ni Avshalom. My son Avshalom, oh my son. Mi yiten moti, ani tachtecha. Who would allow me to die instead of you? Avshalom, b'ni, b'ni. Heart-wrenching. Right, he's looking at his son who's died. That's the Faulkner novel, Absalom, of my Absalom. The loss of his beloved son. And the Gemara describes what he's thinking over here. Tana Debate.
Was that a good book?
It's William Faulkner. So I have read it, but I have no idea what it means or what it says. I read Faulkner? I can't. This is talking about when Avshalom is caught in the tree by his head. He's hanging there in that moment. The pit of hell opened beneath him. And then it quotes that the that the king was upset and went onto the roof and cried, B'ni Avshalom, B'ni Avshalom, mi temuti, B'ni Avshalom, etc. B'hani tamni B'ni lama. If you look at the total number as he's saying B'ni Avshalom, it says it 8 times. B'ni, B'ni, B'ni. And the Gemara says, Shiv'a aske mishiva medura gehenom. They 7 times to rescue him from the 7 levels of Gehenom of hell. So David has this vision of Avshalom hanging there over Sheol, and then he says, okay, I want to rescue you from, I'm praying, B'ni, to pull you out of that. Idach, and the 8th one, why? Iga de Amri de Kariv Reshe Legabe Gufe. One says he was davening to bring his head back to his body. That, to basically give him a more honorable burial, as opposed to being slaughtered in the field and body parts everywhere. Iga de Amri de Aite La Amri de Ati. And some say in order to bring him into Olam Haba, to bring him to this higher level. So you have this idea that he realizes his son is dead, is lost, and he's praying for his Olam Haba. And it's making this intentional allusion to another moment of discovery, which we know the Midrashim on, when you have this idea that a father realizes his beloved son is doomed. And Phyllis says, you can't find, that's because I didn't go the next, to took him later is the other 3. You're right. Okay. If you look over here, the Gemara quotes it all says, it says, Bayzak HaMelech Kol Gadol, B'ni Avshalom, Avshalom, B'ni, B'ni. That's 2 psukim later. So that's 8 total. But you're right. You're paying attention. Good. The one I'm thinking about is when Yitzchak wants to give the brachot to Esav and Yaakov comes in instead. And Yitzchak has a sense that Gam Baruch Yeh, he will be blessed. And Esav comes in and says, V'yecharad Yitzchak charada gedola. And Yitzchak has this terrible fear, ad ma'od, really terrible. Yomar, mi efo, who then? Who had said Sayyid, who hunted for me, v'yaveh li v'ochal mikol, and brought it to me, and I ate from everything. This mikol in the sense of all the goodness in the world. Right? V'akol mikol kol, we say, mentioning. B'terem tavo, before you came, and I gave him the bracha Gam Baruch Yeh, and he is blessed. This one who came, Yaakov, is being blessed. You are not. Says Rashi, says Vayecharad. Midrasho, the Midrash says, Ra Gehenom P'tucha Mitachtav, that he saw Gehenom open beneath him, And Gregory points that Tachtav is Rotilamar Tachat Esav. He sees beneath Esav. He sees Esav here is doomed. Everything he thought was true about Esav was wrong. He certainly has this moment of revelation. We're making this connection here with David, who loves Absalom, never wanted to fight him, never wanted to, certainly didn't want him dead. Realize this is all over. There's no going back. Any future that David had, and I mean, David didn't want him to be the king afterwards. He was going to have Shmuel be it, but he still didn't want Absalom killed.
And wait, sorry. He's saying that about Esav. What about Yaakov? Sorry.
He's saying the Gehenna, Gam Baruch Yeh is about Yaakov, right. And the Yehiyah Charada is about Esav.
Although, I mean, it's Yaakov who's done the bad thing here. Or maybe I guess
it's much confusing. I mean, I don't get too much into that.
Okay.
But the idea of Gam Baruch Yeh is Yitzchak realizing that, yes, that blessing took, whatever that means, Baruch HaKodesh, that even knowing what happened, Yaakov still got the bracha. So I have to rethink everything that's been going on. Okay, but that's more discussion there about what he looks at in terms of Yaakov. Like, it doesn't curse Yaakov. He doesn't give anything bad to Yaakov. That's there. But I think it's that kind of the Midrash is connecting those two stories together. Here, Rav Bazak, who's at the Gush, talks about this a dramatic elegy, a kina dramati, Avshalom, lumat zot, and Avshalom, with all of this, David Mekonen kina dramatit. David has this dramatic kina, toik v'shov, saying over and again, b'ni Avshalom, my son, Avshalom. But what I'm struck by is the fact it's not very dramatic. It's not, I mean, you think of David being the poet, he would have this elegant elegy, a real kina. This is just the same words over and over again. It's not, I mean, I could say B'ni Avshalom over and over again. And if you look at these other keynote that we have in Sefer Shmuel, you know, over Yonatan and Shaul, right? Kenen David et kina zot. Midam chali mechil giborim, the blood of the dead, the fat of the heroes, Cherev Sha'ul lo tiyashuv rekam, Shaul's sword would never go back empty, right? Hanim'im b'chayim motam lo nifradu mishamrim kalu me'arot gavaru. That's all the showing. I mean, that's much more poetic as a kina. This is not poetic. We have that al v'yikanein ha'melech al Abner. Explicitly, he has a kina here on Abner. He says, Hakamot Navel, Yamot Avner, Yadchala, Asurot, your hands were not bound, Ragalchan, Nuchujim, your legs were not in chains. In Pol, if Ne, Bene Avlat, Nafalta, you've fallen among the sinners. I mean, he's got poetic keynote. This is not a poetic kina. This is an undramatic kina. David is not being David Hamelach, the Na'im Zemirot Yisrael. We don't have to heal him about that. I think the reason for that, comes from an idea of where David's Tehillim and Kinot, his poetry, where does it come from? There's an interesting Gemara, a couple of places in the Medrash. This is the Echarabah, when it says about Mizmor LaAsaf, Elkim Ba'o Goyim B'Nachlatecha Timur Hechalecha. It's a Mizmor about the destruction of Beit Hamidash, and the Medrash asks, why is it called a Mizmor? Should have been a kina. And then he asks, why is it Mizmor? And he says, because the Mizmor, because Hashem struck his anger out on wood and stone and not against the people themselves. But I would say the exact opposite. What we're looking at here is something that this should not have been a kina. This should have been a shir. I read that. Loivak Tariq Limar. This should have been a Mizmar, because fundamentally, Achimatz, the messenger who said he told bring good news, is right. Avshalom was trying to kill David. David should be celebrating the fact that Hashem clearly has intervened on his behalf, right? The whole incident with the tree clearly was not a coincidence. That clearly was divine intervention. The fact that David's army won against overwhelming odds was not a coincidence. But the outcome was a Bisra, it was good news. Right, there were miracles there. There Nisim Nistarim, you could justify him as being natural, but the fact that the other army died in the Yar without being fought. And I'm arguing, and this is based on something by something a talk that Elchanan Samet gave at the 2013 Yimei Inun B'Tanach, that David should have been seeing Shira here. I understand he's missing his son, but he is sort of missing the point of what Hashem has done for him here. And he can't compose his kina. We're going to look at that. We're going to talk about that. Phyllis is shaking her head here. He has no divine inspiration. Hashem is not on his side over here. He is upset, but he's looking at it wrong. Because we're going to look at how the people looked at this. Right? Because fundamentally what happened here is that David has an army. They're sitting in Machanaim, and they're going out and they're putting their lives on the line for him. And all they hear is David's lament about their enemy, the one they're fighting. And he says, "Me tain moti and me taktach. Who did allow me to die instead of you?" Because what did the people say last parak? All of David's people say, "Lo teitze, you, David, stay here. Ki im nas nanus, but you need to run away. Lo yisimu elein lev, don't pay attention to us. Be yamutu chetzeinu, and if half of us die, lo yisimu elein lev. Because you're as good as 10,000 of us. You should stay here in the city." So his people are telling him that your life is more important than ours. And he's telling them, Absalom's life is more important than mine. So all his people are going to hear, well, Absalom's life is more important than ours. And that's exactly what they say. We'll see that. Okay, that David is, by publicly saying that, he's saying that everything that you did was worthless. I didn't want this to happen at all. Right? David would rather that everyone else, all of my army, all you would have died and Absalom would still be alive. That's basically what he's saying. And the text itself implies that Yoav was right to kill Absalom, even though it was against David's command. Right? That's what we said that last time. When at the death there, when they killed David, then Yoav blows the shofar. That's the all clear coming back. And the army stops. Yoav calmed the people, brought them back. If Absalom was still alive, he would still be leading an army against David. And so what David is doing here, he's acting like a father, not like the king. And that's a problem. The king cannot allow his personal relationship with his family to override what the people need. He needs to represent all the people, not just his family. Yeah.
So what I don't like about this is you're taking one of the most poignant scenes in Tanakh and putting on a rational, he has to be the king, not the father. Not for me.
Okay. I we want to see it personally, but I think that's part of why it's here, why we're going so much detail into this, is to show how this was a failing here of David as Melech.
Okay. I don't agree with this approach. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you're not going to like it. That's where we're going to go. You're not going to like it. I encourage you to give this year next time and from the other approach. I keep asking people to help me out here, okay? And I'd be happy to hear that. But I agree that.
I'll do a little looking around and I'll next week.
So next week I'm going to be Mr. Shem in Kansas City. I'm not going to be able to do this. Probably do the Friday, but we'll probably be on
the week after. And I see Suzanne talking too. She's going to do it with me, right?
Okay, this would be good. And if you want to send me sources, we'll put it up on the page as well. We'll do this. But again, I agree that you read this initially as a sense of Absalom Bini, this poignant moment. But everything else the text goes is saying no. There's a problem here.
Wait, you said we saw that Yoav did the right thing. So
I'm talking about that's what ended the battle. That the text implies.
Right, what if he had paraded him in chains and That would have also.
That's a good question. I don't know if that would have done it. Would that have inspired his people to try to rescue him?
You know.
Would that?
Anyway, okay.
I
said my piece. I'm muted.
I agree, which is why I was actually not listening to this, but I'm listening to Rav Samet's shiur here. And, you know, the more I listened to it, the more I agreed with him. Now, it's in Hebrew, but it's pretty straightforward Hebrew. This is the, I'm so slow here. Come on. You can listen to it online here if it actually comes up. We'll get there eventually. We're going to move forward here. And that this, you know, the Gemara in Kedushin that talks about being Melech Mochel al Kvodo. Amrav Yisrael ben Shila, Amrav Matna, Amrav Chista. Av Shem Mochel al Kvodo, Kvodo Mochel. A father can forgive and say, my son's done something terrible. That's okay. I don't need that honor. Rav Shem Mochel al Kvodo, Ein Kvodo Mochel. A rabbi can't. And then it goes, if you're Rav Shemachal Kvodo Machal, rabbi can, but then a Nasi can't. They said, if you're Nasi Shemachal Kvodo Kvodo Machal, even if you say a Nasi, so a secondary leader can't. Melech Shemachal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Machal. A king cannot allow his honor to be violated. And why? This is from the portal Daf Yomi. Maragon Chaim Brisk, so the Brisk Rav said, that the honor of a king is different. That the kavod of melech is dependent on the people. That losing that kavod means you're disrespecting the people who appointed you, who have anointed you king. That the king represents the people, has to realize that he's doing that. And again, if it is nature of being a father overrides that. That's real, that's personal, that's human. It's still a mistake. Here we go. Here's the here we go. This is the Motav Shalom by Yochanan Samet. It's about an hour long. Let's go back. And I lost my notes. Okay. That the kavod of a king, and certainly having someone actively rebelling, trying to kill him, is exactly that. So it is a disrespect to his people to be so publicly mourning. You can mourn over his son, but all he can say is "Bini, bini, if only I died instead of you." So that's what happens. Look at the way the text puts it. Pasuk Bet. Now you got Yoav. Yoav is told what happened. Yoav is still out in the battlefield there. They're all coming back. They just had the messenger running ahead. Look, the king is crying. He's mourning over Avshalom. And all the people come back and all their salvation. They're coming back cheering that they won this battle. And it becomes from Chua to Evel. They are now, it becomes an act of mourning for them. Because the people all heard, but now the king is crying over his son. The people all stole into the city. As though they had lost, the way they would steal and embarrassed if they had lost. They were ashamed of what they did. They won the battle. They're coming back ashamed that they had won. Sorry about that. A melech la'at at panav, and the king la'at, which usually translated as a tough because I covered his face. And it's the word la'at without the aleph, la'at panav, but atav covered his face with his cloak. By zak ha'melech kol gadol, and the king's crying out in a great voice as everyone, all the people are coming back from the army. B'ni avshalom, avshalom, b'ni, b'ni, that's the other three that we've mentioned before. But it's la'at panav, it means the idea of being slow as well, right? That's what means to be depressed. You have slow speech, that brain fog. He can't think of anything else.
Annie, I have to think he's feeling also a bit the guilt of his mistakes.
I'm sure. I'm sure that's all part of that.
Even in the normal loss of a child, like you feel a guilt on, a special guilt on this one.
Right. And think of what he could have done differently that this would never have happened. You're right. David is completely human.
Yes.
So Phyllis adds, it's not so bad for victorious soldiers to realize they did a terrible thing, even if necessary. Okay. You've got that side of it as well there.
I mean, there's also, is there like a limited time that he's allowed to mourn for his son? I mean, is it like he's literally just supposed to pretend it didn't happen?
I would argue that he can mourn. But to make that privately. The only thing that he's doing, and that should be, and it really should be a private thing. They should sit Shiva, he should sit Shiva, and they should come to him. But to greet the army that saved his life, because they're not going to do it next time. And there certainly will be a next time. They're not going to go fight for him if he's like this. The next parak is the next civil war, right? If they know that, okay, he's not going to, that he clearly doesn't want it to happen. Okay, and I will quote my favorite quote from Winnie the Pooh. "Good morning, Eeyore," said Pooh. "Good morning, Pooh Bear," said Eeyore gloomily. "If it is a good morning, which I doubt." "Why, what's the matter?" "Nothing, Pooh Bear, nothing. We can't all, and some of us don't. That's all there's to it." "Can't all what?" said Pooh. "Gaiety, song and dance. Here we go around the mulberry bush. They just can't even think of happy things anymore." That's what depression is. That's what La'ad Panav, that his face was, he was moving slow. Everything was moving slowly. He wasn't thinking about anything else. He wasn't doing both at the same time. All he's got is this love of his son. And I don't know if anyone knows Olivia Friedman. I just found her. She is the head of technology and learning at Ida Crown High School in Chicago. She has a great shiurim on Safaria. So, highly recommend it, but she's quoting Game of Thrones, which I've never read or seen at all. But evidently, one of the things there is, why are the men of the Night's Watch take no wives and father no children? So they will not love. Love is the death of duty. That becomes the bottom line that, I don't know who Jon Snow is supposed to learn here. I don't know who Jon Snow is. Do anyone else watch Game of Thrones? Anyway, but
I watched it. It was very addictive, and the end was horrible.
Oh, I'm sorry. But love is the death of duty is part of that message here, and that's true. And I think that's the message here as well, that's what happens here. It's a tragedy, but in this case, we have this very human David who is abandoning his people.
Can I say something very controversial?
Sure.
Maybe, well, just I'm thinking about Christianity, that priests can't marry, which sort of is similar. You know, you can't love humans, whatever. I mean, it's sort of, that's not the Jewish approach, right? We don't.
You're right.
So this just feels like we got to acknowledge he's human. He has love, yes. He has family.
And that's why I say this is a dialectic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I always say that what's right, love or duty? And the answer in Judaism always is yes.
Right.
And these your questions that Rav Soloveitchik just talked about, the dialectica Yudit as opposed to the Hegelian dialectic, that there isn't a single answer. And we have to realize that there are balances over there. So this is tragic. I'm sorry, Phyllis. There's no good answer. There was nothing good going to come out of this. I mean, from the way back when Bathsheba happened in Perek Yud Aleph, this is all one step after another. And Yoav knows how David feels about Avshalom. Way back when. Remember Avshalom? Avshalom is the one who had Amnon, his brother, killed, and then runs away to his grandfather in Geshur. And at that point, source 19, this is back in Perek Gimel, but the Chal David Melch Latzid Avshalom, and David yearned to go out after Avshalom. And Avshalom's exile, well before all this. Ki nicham al Amnon, ki met, and he already changed his mind about, he was insulted about Amnon, he's forgiven up the death of Amnon. Yivadai Yoav ben Tzruya, and Yoav knew. Yoav is David's chief of staff. Ki lev hamelch al Avshalom, that the king is pining for Avshalom. So Yoav is one who arranges to bring Avshalom back and arranges the Isha Chachma Mitkoa to convince David to let Avshalom back after all that. And similarly, last parak, when Achimatz wants to go and tell David the good news, look, we won the battle. And then Yoav tells him no, because David's not going to take that as good news. Yomer lo Yoav lo ish besarata ayom, that you can't give this good news today. You were the one who brought the news last time. But that's different. Today is different. This is not Besurah, which Stam Besurah is good news. He came ben HaMelech met, because the son of the king is dead. So what does Yoav do? Yoav takes David, who's crying, bent over on the roof of the gatehouse. Everybody's listening, and he picks him up and slaps him across the cheek once or twice to snap out of it. Yoav comes to the king in the gatehouse, in the house. You have ashamed all of your servants, Maltimat Nafshecha, who saved your life, Hayom, today. But Nefesh Banecha, who saved the lives of your sons, Ubinatecha, and your daughters, Nefesh Nafshecha, and the lives of your wives, Nefesh Banecha, and all the wives of your concubines as well. Avshalom was king, you'd all be dead. You know that. That's what you have to do. If you kill the king, you have to kill all of his heirs as well. La'avad sonecha, you love your enemy, you hate those who love you. He gotta tell you, that's what you said today, you have no ministers, you have no servants. I know. Because if Avshalom was alive, all of us were dead, that would be better. Okay? I mean, that's exactly what I said that was what was going to happen. And that, I'm saying the text is telling us that. Yoav is telling David that to his face. Yoav will pay the price. He's going to get fired for this, by the way. That'll come next part. Batakum. Now get up. Save the Berele Babadecha. You need to get up and talk to your people. Kivashem Nishpati. Ki imencha yod say. Because I swear that if you don't get out and get up and get out of here, this is the aposiapesis where we don't say the second half of the oath, that if this happens, then no one will stay with you tonight. All your loyal soldiers will abandon you. And now what? And what you're doing now is worse. From every bad thing that's happened to you, from your youth till now, you are making things worse. That's Yoav. Again, pretty hard. This is the way Rav Bazak puts it. The Rav Shah Yoav, Nokvim v'charifchim kol shehu. Yoav's words, which are so precise and so harsh, Mavitim emet b'ra, express something that's clearly true. And say David nilchamu avuro. Now David's men fought for him. Bidia, knowing. Shigam David hu yoshet shotefla. That David was part of this. We don't deal with contemporary politics.
Because if we did, we know all those people that told them the truth and were fired.
I know that. That's exactly right. Again, we're not talking about contemporary politics in any way whatsoever. We will never relate, okay? Anything is coincidental here, but this is what Yoav is telling David, you've got to get out, because if you don't, you're going to lose the only people with loyalty. You're right, you're in the middle of civil war, and you're now abandoning all of them. Because the other option was that Avshalom would be king. No one has any doubt that Avshalom would not have had a hesitance about killing David and everyone else at this point. But his intense mourning on Avshalom. David pogea b'lochmo. David is wounding his soldiers. Hanam manim with a faithful soldier. Manchim lahem mapach nefesh. And he is, I would say, translate mapach nefesh. Despair of the soul. Let me formally define my pach.
Isn't pach trash?
It is, but that's not.
It's all the trash.
A pach is just. Google translates my pach as disappointment.
Oh.
I think this is harsher than that, right? People are all disappointed. Demshech tvarav yoav marchik lechet. And Yoav continues on going, but Toin complains. David, that David's behavior, that David is going to chase away from his camp those who are most loyal to him. That's what he's expressing here. And yes, he's human. Yes, that's tragic. And yes, there's a problem. And Rabbi Zak is also saying that it seems that the text is agreeing with Yoav's point of view. David is just called Hamelach, the king. Never called David. David is hinting that David is acting like a human being, an individual person. And he's forgetting that he is supposed to be Hamelach through all of this. And the Hamelach who's saying Avshalom Bini is a problem. So that he has to go beyond his feelings, his human feelings. He pulled to Batakol, acted on behalf of all. If he had him at Yoav Hetev, as Yoav well knew.
It just shows you that being a public servant has a very dear cost personally.
Absolutely. And that's exactly where I'm going with that. And that's, we've talked, now there's the themes of Shmuel Bet when being there. There's Mikdash, Malchut, and Tshuva, which I like the alliteration. So I call that Mikdash, Malchut, and Mechila. Make it alliterative. Those are the themes of Shmuel Bet that go through this. And part of the idea of Melucha is that it is exactly that, of what it has to have to sacrifice in order to be a public servant. And that it has to be a servant, that the Melech has to be an Eved to the people. We had that right from the beginning, Shmuel Bet, that David is told that Shlomo could only be David's heir if he was Hashem's son. This idea of this kind of virtual Yibum of being able to give up his children. Right? That's what David is told. Who Yibne Bayit Lishmi? And that this one who will build the bayit will be the one, he will be my son, Hashem says. I will be his father. And we talked briefly the fact that when David conquers Ammon, he takes the crown of Ammon becomes his crown. We talked in some detail about that. When we looked at that in Perek Yud Bet, and that was seen as the crown of the dynasty of David, that you had to wear this crown. This is Bekaka Teret Milkom Me'al Rosho. And he took the crown of Malkom from his head. Mishkalak Hikarza Havit, it was weighed a whole pound of silver, it was like 30 pounds. Vem Yikara Me'al Rosh David, it was on the head of David. And how heavy this was, it clearly wasn't wearing such a crown. And what Milkom means is not read by the Gemara as Malcolm, their king, but of their god Molech. The god of, okay, we talk a great deal, and that's Rashi about it. Is that Artet Malcolm? Bibnei Amon Kai, it was the Malcolm of their king. What was that? Kachavim Shalhem, Malcolm Shema, that the name was Malcolm, which in Malachim is another term for Molech. That's the child sacrifice worship. Vir Benobi Tolam Molech. We talk about how that figure, that literal Charles Hagen became the figurative one of Melech Yisrael. You have to be willing to give up your connection to your children in order to be a king. Love is the death of duty. Tragically, in this case. And we kind of see that, and we see the failure of that throughout Sefer Melachim, where we never have one good king followed by followed by another good king, right? I mean, we get David and Shlomo, that's great. Then we have Rehoboam and things fall apart. We have Chizkiah who's followed by Menashe. We have Yeshua.
It seems to me almost this is sort of a story about that. Why, you know, what is it? Lo tasim alecha melech. I mean, that why kings are not ideal. And because you think about Abraham and Akedat Yitzchak, the whole point is don't sacrifice. You can.
Right. We talk about that. No, I say that. I read Akedat as that. Sacrificing your children is appropriate in the sense of giving up, that I don't control my child. It just can't be literal in the sense of cutting his head off. Okay, that we dedicate our children to other things, we push them out and let them achieve great things on their own. We have to sacrifice our children, figuratively, not literally. In case the kid, sometimes we want, I mean, depending how your kids are acting, but.
You have to say that the week we are now empty nesters. We have no kids. We put them all out.
Okay, Mazel Tov. We got rid of all but one. So Liara has officially moved to Baltimore.
All right. Well, I talked to her. Okay, sorry. We won't do this on recording.
Sorry. Okay. But yeah. So we need. So everyone needs to be able to give up their children. In that sense, a king has to be able to do that as well. To sacrifice that feeling of connection. That's part of that duty. So what happens? David actually does pull himself together. Vayakam ha-melech vayeshev bashar. So the king gets up. Vayakam is always a sense of intentionally, you know, doing something, and then goes down to the gate. He's on top of the gate. The gatehouse right now, the people are all running by, looking up, and he's crying there. He comes down into the shar. And the people were all told, Hinei ha-melech yoshev bashar. The king has come down, is now sitting in the gate. And the people come back to him. And Yisrael nas isha alo, and Yisrael, which we've all, throughout this parak, has been talking about the ones who are loyal to Absalom, nas had fled to their tents after the battle. So he doesn't quite get there. You know, David insisted, kum tsev daber alev abdecha. He does the kum, he doesn't say, he doesn't actually talking there. He's standing there, he's getting there. And so this ends on a very ambiguous note. And he goes back to this Yisrael Naslo Allah, that all of Yisrael, Avshalom's army is running back to the tent. That's right at the phrase we saw at the end of the, in the middle of the last parak, after the battle. Right? Vayichu Avshalom, Vayishlichu Oto Bayar, Allah Pachar Gadol, they took Avshalom's body and they threw it into the big pit. Vayitzu Allah, Galav Anim Gadol Mo'o, and they piled on a huge pile of rocks. V'chol Yisrael Nasu Ish Lo Halo, and all of Yisrael had run back to their tents. They're back there. We have the story of David, and now we're back to where that starts. David's back.
Danny, who buried Absalom? Was it Israel?
Well, given that it was Absalom and his people who had killed him were right there, so I assume that the same ones who killed him, next part is Vayichu, they took Absalom and they threw him in the pit. Vayitzu Allah God, they buried him.
Okay.
I mean, it's an ignominious burial. Remember, he has this Yad Absalom sitting in Yerushalayim that he wanted to be his monument. Stuck under this pile of rocks in the middle of nowhere. So we come back to this ambiguous note of where this civil war is over, but there's still a lot of healing that has to happen. We have to try to pull the country back together again. And that we'll have to do. Well, if you want to give a share on David and his personal feelings, that would be great. And then next time we'll talk about where we go from here. I'm going to stop recording.